You're listening to an iHeart podcast.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
A beautiful young mom's torso turns up in a local dumpster. Her parents are missing. Why is the case not yet totally solved? This, as we learn in the last few hours, very odd circumstances surrounding the cut marks on the young mom's body. What, if anything, do they reveal? The beautiful young mom, Mae Haskell, just 37 years old. It was stated that police believe her torso was found in a dumpster. That is incorrect. Her torso has been found in a dumpster. No thanks to the killer who conveniently removed her head and fingerprints and any bodily identification such as a birthmark or a tattoo, all gone. Whoever killed her, and I think I know who it was, Sam Haskell, knew exactly what he was doing. So don't jump up and claim insanity on me. And again, we're still looking for her parents. But what more have we learned in the last hours? I'm Nancy Grace. This is Crime Stories. Thank you for being with us here at Crime Stories and on Sirius XM 111. First of all, take a listen to Dave Mack, Crime Online.
The headless torso of a female was found in a trash dumpster in Encino, California by a homeless man just after 6 a.m. on November 8, 2023. The torso was identified the following month as 37-year-old Maylee Haskell. And now, 4 months later, the autopsy report has been released. According to the autopsy report, her cause of death has been deferred. But given the circumstances of the case, which includes the deliberate concealment of the body by dismemberment and disposal, the manner of death is homicidal violence.
I guess so, unless she dismembered herself and then jumped into a dumpster. That told me actually something very important, that the COD cause of death is deferred. Why is that important? That means that on her torso, we can't tell why she died. And there is conversation and not wild speculation, but conversation regarding the question, was Mae dismembered while still alive? That said, take a listen to this.
According to the autopsy report, whoever did this dismembered the torso with a single sharp force injury at the base of the anterior neck. No fatal injuries were found on the torso. The report further states Haskell's head, majority of the neck, and majority of all four extremities as absent, and the amputation sites as remarkably smooth, which suggests a sharp power tool was likely used.
Listen, I'm just a trial lawyer, okay? I need an expert, and joining me is an all-star panel to make sense of what we know right now. I'm going to Gigi McKelvey, host of the podcast Pretty Lies and Alibis, but first to renowned death investigator, professor of forensics, Jacksonville State University, author of Blood Beneath My Feet on Amazon, and star of a hit podcast series, Body Bags, with Joseph Scott Morgan. Joseph Scott, thank you for being with us. And when I say he is a professor of forensics at Jacksonville State University, he and Jacksonville State University has helped me do not one but two very detailed recreations of crimes, one over 60 years old. Their criminal procedure and criminal law undergrad program is amazing. Joseph Scott, thank you for being with us. I need you to help me. I think I know what it means, but before I would stand up in front of a jury and explain it and regular people talk so that somebody like me could understand it, I would absolutely consult with an expert. The, quote, head, majority of the neck, and majority of all four extremities, which means your two arms and your two legs, are absent, and the, quote, amputation sites, I've never heard of a dismemberment referred to as an amputation site, but okay, are remarkably smooth, What does that mean?
That means that these insults that she sustained, these injuries, which are post-mortem, perhaps, came with something that could deliver sufficient amount of force. And it's kind of interesting, Nancy, because in one of the little segments that was read just a moment ago relative to the autopsy report, they talked about a single sharp force injury. Well, that implies that maybe some instrument was used and wielded at her. But then they go on to say that there is evidence of a power tool. That's significant because power tools leave very specific markings behind on the bone, and they create clean edges in the tissue itself. It's not like you have to go through it over and over and over again, pounding away. This is something that they can actually tie back. This is tremendous physical evidence. If they can find that tool, they can marry that up through tool mark examination, which in the medical legal field, we work with tool mark examiners all the time. The big tell here is going to be on that surface of the bone. When you look down it, it'll have little spiral swirls in it like this. And I think that's probably what they're looking at.
Okay. I didn't want to interrupt you in case there was any part of what you said that I could understand. So let's start at the beginning. And sadly, I'm going to have to grill you like July the 4th barbecue. Okay, let's start at the very beginning. You said a lot, but let's start with amputation sites. Remarkably smooth, which suggests a power tool was likely used. You, Joe Scott Morgan, also used the phraseology post-mortem, quote, perhaps, quote, your word, not mine. What would indicate to you, if anything, that May could have been dismembered or partially dismembered while alive?
That's a very simple assessment. What you're looking for, while the heart is beating, obviously, you're looking for if this trauma took place antemortem, which means before death, you're going to see these little focal areas of hemorrhage in the soft tissue. That means the muscle, even into the bone, you'll see this. If it's a postmortem after death event, you're going to be absent that. And I find it very curious that they've kind of entertained this thought, because they're seeking here to try to determine what her...
Entertain what thought?
Well, that this has been put forth in the media that there is a possibility that she was alive while she was being dismembered, Nancy.
But I'm asking you, not some wingnut on the internet making things up. If you were to look at a torso alone, Joe Scott Morgan, what, if anything, would tell you she had been dismembered while alive?
Those focal areas of hemorrhage, they would be there in the soft tissue. You could appreciate them.
What do you mean focal areas of hemorrhage? Do you mean she would have bled, but she didn't, which means her heart wasn't pumping, which means she was already dead when she was dismembered? Yes, no?
Yes.
Okay. I can't believe you actually answered yes or no. Jackie, he did it. I think I just won $100.
Red letter day, Nancy.
Big day for me. Big day for me. Hold on. Can you look at a torso? No arms, no head, no neck, no legs. At the, as they say, amputation sites, the severing. How would you be able to tell if they didn't bleed? I mean, they had to bleed whether her heart was pumping or not. And right, wrong?
Wrong. What you look for are in life, if you sustain an injury, you're going to get a hemorrhage, just like a bruise, okay? Or a cut. Everybody can identify with that. All of those other sites that are absent, that hemorrhage that I refer to where it's seeping out into the interstitial tissue, that tissue that's surrounding the area.
Whoa, wait. Haven't we talked about you not talking like that? Okay, so are you saying that if she were still alive when she was dismembered, I would see bleeding on the outside, possibly of her skin, where she the arms, legs were amputated. But also, you're saying interstitial tissue, I think is what you said. Inside, I would see bleeding as well?
Yes. Yeah, it will...
Okay, wait, I think I've got it. Hey, you do know if you say something right now, I'll totally lose this train of thought, okay? So don't unravel this. Wait a minute, let me get my mind around this. Can you imagine what I put the poor medical examiner through before he went on the stand, he, she went on the stand? So this is what I'm getting at, Joe Scott. If her body had been wiped down for, let's just say, the killer, Sam Haskell's, fingerprints or DNA, I wouldn't get that blood, the bleeding on the outside. But you're telling me if she was alive at the time of the dismemberment, there would be bleeding on the inside like when you get a bruise. There would be bruising or blood inside her tissue where the arms were cut off.
Yes, that's accurate.
Okay, that just made a lot of sense to me. So you, as a death investigator or medical examiner, can look at this torso and you will be able to tell me upon microscopic inspection of the severance.
Yes.
Whether she was dead or alive at the time.
Yes, you can. And here's one more factor, is that once you establish that, you look at all these other sites and you see those that are absent hemorrhage, Nancy, and it kind of begins to tighten down that time frame relative to the postmortem interval. How long had she been dead, perhaps? And my understanding is, and this is very valuable, they found her remains rather quickly. So they would have been able to do some kind of assessment about this. I think it's not like she had been down forever and ever, amen, like a lot of the cases that we cover.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Joe Scott, you're telling me that if the dismemberment had started before she was dead,
yes,
you will be able, under a microscope, because you're looking at the very delicate tissue around the cuts, around the severance, you're looking to see if there's, as you call it, hemorrhaging, bruising, bleeding inside that tissue.
Yes.
You'll be able to tell me, for instance, she was alive when her arms were cut off. By the time her legs were cut off, she was dead. Is that what you're trying to say?
Yes, and you don't need a microscope to ascertain that. You can actually see that with
really?
What we refer to as the unaided eye. Yeah, absolutely. It's just like seeing a bruise on anyone else. Yeah, and you could appreciate that. And they would have, at the ME's office in L.A. County, which they're top-notch, man, they would have been able to pick up that very, very quickly. The big thing here, though, pay attention to what they're saying about the neck very carefully, Nancy, because this neck, from what they're saying, her neck has been taken off at the really, if you just think about running parallel to the shoulders, they're searching for a cause of death. Think about everything they threw out there, talking about possibility, could have been, may have been, these sorts of things. They're missing that neck that obviously is still attached to the head, wherever that is. And that is where your answers are going to lie, in my opinion.
I don't know what you mean by that. You're saying, are you saying that where she was cut at the neck or her actual neck will give me the answer?
Yeah, where the head and the neck are severed from the body, it's so low that they can't appreciate things like, if you're talking about a C-clamp here on the neck where you get hemorrhage, where somebody's been choked out, they can't appreciate petechiae in the eye. You know, they talked about gunshot wound. They've talked about blunt force trauma. They've probably even entertained the idea of suffocation as well. They threw out an entire litany of these things, Nancy, and there's really nothing to hang their hat on because, as you said from the top, there's no trauma on the torso, apparently, because they're not calling it.
Wow. Just got... That was an amazing analysis. Guys, we are trying to make sense of what we are learning from the latest. And for the latest, let's go straight out to Gigi McKelvey joining us, journalist host of Pretty Lies and Alibis. And you can find her at prettyliesandalibis.org. Gigi, thank you for being with us. Bring us up to date.
Well, the last thing we've heard, obviously, is this autopsy report, which is horrific just to even imagine she was potentially dismembered while alive. Otherwise, we haven't learned a whole lot as far as the investigation goes. They've been very tight-lipped. We do know about the workers, how they were hired for $500 to haul these garbage bags off. We're a little suspicious when they were told this was a bag of rocks and said it felt mushy and soft. So they pull over, open the bag, and see there's human remains in there, specifically seeing a belly button which matches the torso the homeless man found the next day. It's insane. These guys go to two different police stations to report what they've seen, only to be given the runaround. In the meantime, gosh knows what Samuel is out hiding as far as evidence. Ultimately, the police go, after the homeless man finds the body, the torso, the next morning in that dumpster, go to the house, see the blood on the concrete in the driveway, go in the house and find evidence that something horrific has happened in this house, as well as finding garbage bags with bloody bed clothing in the garage.
Guys, speaking of the day workers, you know that they would have been blamed for May's murder if they had not called police immediately. Now, they were turned down at not one but two, that we know of, LE, law enforcement agencies. And they keep trying to report they've got a body in a bag and no one will listen. Now, you know, if they had not done that, that ultimately they would have ended up taking the fall for this. And I wonder, is that not exactly what Sam Haskell intended when he called them to remove the remains? Speaking of those 911 calls, listen to what we've just obtained.
West Valley, possible DD 4115 Coldstream Terrace, 4115 Coldstream Terrace. Monitor comments. PR standing by in front of Topanga.
Let's hear that one more time. It was so quick. I want to make sure I hear it all.
West Valley, possible DD 4115 Coldstream Terrace, 4115 Coldstream Terrace. Monitor comments. PR standing by in front of Topanga.
Joining me is high-profile lawyer Matthew Mangino, former district attorney and author of The Executioner's Toll. Listen to this. The crimes, arrests, trials, appeals, last meals, and final words, and executions. Matthew, thank you for being with us. You can find Matthew at mattmangino.com. Matthew, a lot of people, I mean, I think we need to focus on where are the two missing in-laws? May's mother and father, who move here, they are the ones that sold everything they had to put her through college. She was an excellent student. Sadly, that is when she met rich brat Sam Haskell IV. They sacrificed everything, even selling their home and moving here to try and help their daughter get a better life. Now, they're dead, and they moved into that house. Go Shim and Zeng Wang moved into the house to take care of the children and help her because she is the only breadwinner in the home. I think their house note was, oh my goodness, like $7,000 a month. She was paying the house note and everything else. While Haskell, Sam Haskell IV, his daddy's a millionaire, was pursuing his crazy videos that he called movies, while she's holding down the fort, paying all the bills. They're gone. And it has been said, it's been told to me by her neighbors, her friend girls, that he hated her parents. They were not fluent in English, and he resented that. He hated that they were there all the time. Well, I mean, they're the only ones taking care of the children, along with May. I don't know what he's doing, running around in the backyard doing videos of himself and his friends and working out and going to expensive lunches. Oh, hey, you know what? I'm going to go out of order. You got to hear what Haskell, while his wife is out working. Hey, I don't have a problem with that. My mom worked. Her mother worked in a factory, for Pete's sake, and farmed. But I want you to hear, this is what he's doing during the day while May is out working and her parents are taking care of his children. Take a listen to him. He posted this on his TikTok. Listen.
Like my resume says, unhappy, bitter, resentful.
Now I'm consistently never going to stop drinking.
Shouts out to the waiter at the restaurant above Nordstrom's for just like completely burning out of my fillet. Like, what kind of a monster are you, homie?
Do you hear this guy? I mean, he grew up in the lap of luxury, and he's saying, what kind of a monster are you, homie? So he is out at this fancy restaurant at Nordstrom's. I don't even buy a pair of socks in there. Getting a steak, a fillet, and whining on TikTok that it was cooked too well while May is working. I mean, it would be a cold day in HELL that David Lynch did not go out that door at 6:30 every morning and go to work. All right. But all that aside, let's get right back to what we know right now. I want you to hear more about the torso found in the dumpster. But first, I was talking to Matthew Mangino. Matthew, I'll blame you for that rant you forced me to go on. Matthew, what about this? Why didn't police go in when they were called by the day laborers stating, this guy just gave us a torso to get rid of? The police say they went to the location and didn't see anything wrong and left. Wouldn't that have been exigent circumstances?
Well, I think, Nancy, first of all, I mean, you have to put it in perspective. I mean, you get a call that these day workers found a torso. Okay, so you might be a little skeptical on the way out there whether you should be or you shouldn't. And certainly when you get there and you don't find anything on the porch or, you know, in the driveway, yeah, that possibly could be exigent circumstances, which would permit you to go in without a warrant to search to see if there's anything amiss. But, you know, I think, you know, more than anything else, the police are a bit caught off guard by what's described to them. Does that mean that they shouldn't do their job, that they shouldn't follow through on this tip that was given to them by the day workers? You know, I think it's something, you know, that we can look back as a Monday morning quarterback and say, hey, listen, you should have went in immediately. That may have not made any difference in the case. Obviously, if there's a torso in a bag, the person's already dead. The question is there anybody else at risk? Possibly the parents that we know are now missing.
Well, I can guarantee you this, Matthew Mangino, if they had gone in, based on what the day laborers said, they would have been barbecued, skewered, and run out of town, okay? Because it would be their fault that they went in without a warrant. So that's the state of affairs in that jurisdiction. But I want to tell you something else that I learned, Matthew Mangino. One of the victims was 64 years old, the husband. The wife was 59. And all of their photos, everything they had online for the last 10 years, it was all deleted after they all go missing. They had five siblings who were trying to find the mom. I confirmed that they put May through Cal State at Northridge, sacrificing everything and moving to the U.S. to help her start her career in accounting. Even, as I said, selling their home to pay for her school. Not only that, she got a job at Monterey Park to pay for May's education. May was stuck with a $7,000 mortgage. Haskell never helped her pay, and the in-laws were the ones to take care of the children. Those are just a few little background information that I learned. But I wanted to go to you, Matthew, about whether the cops should have gone in. This comes from a very old and revered U.S. Supreme Court case, U.S. versus Carroll, exigent circumstances. And it's so old, it dates back to the moonshine days, where the cops, the revenuers, the IRS, the tax man, could never catch the moonshiners because as soon as they got wind they were on the way to break up a steal, they'd take off with all the moonshine. So, and you could see their car dragging in the back with everything in the trunk, and that's where exigent circumstances came from. The evidence is leaving. We're losing the evidence that now applies to modern day cases such as this one. Yes, no, Mangino.
Well, I would say yes. And as you know, Nancy, you know, a lot of the constitutional protections that we have grew out of that era of moonshiners and prohibition. But you know, the thing that I think you need to be careful of is certainly you have a report of a body or some portion of a body. And you want to make sure as police officers that you don't do anything that could jeopardize an investigation. So if you go into this home, even though there may be exigent circumstances and you confront somebody and you begin to ask questions, you know, do you put all that information that you might gain at risk because a court determines that there weren't exigent circumstances at that time. If you received a report that there was a portion of a body, a torso, well, what are the exigent circumstances?
Well, you know, Matthew, in this jurisdiction, if the cops had gone in, they would have been skewered. They'd probably all lose their jobs, for Pete's sake, without actually seeing something in the home to back up the day laborers. As a matter of fact, in our Cut 19, we hear LAPD Chief Michael Moore addressing it. Listen.
The bags that the individuals had referred to having existed were not there, and which limited the officer's ability to act any further as far as moving into the home that was there, that there was no one coming out or talking to us from. Now, as we know, with follow-up investigation that resulted in the following morning, where another individual found what appears to be human remains in a garbage container some distance away. We tied that together with this earlier report, and detectives rolled back, and now robbery homicide has what we believe to be a very tragic circumstance of a death of a mother and potentially her parents at the hands of her husband. And we have a murder investigation that's going on with that.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. In the last hours, we are learning more about what we can get about the autopsy report and what it reveals about the death of May. To Mike McCormick joining us, high-profile lead investigator, MCM Investigations in L.A. at mcminvestigations.com. Mike, thank you for being with us. I think Mangino is right. I think that it doesn't matter. By the time Haskell, according to police, he's not been found guilty yet. By the time Haskell had put May's body parts in a bag, her parents were long dead. So if cops had gone in the day before, what would they have found? They might have found their bodies as well. I doubt it, because he was already in the disposal phase. He was getting rid of stuff by the time the day laborers had been called. That said, we don't need any of that evidence that the cops may have gotten the day before, because we have that torso and we have Haskell calling the laborers, asking them to remove the torso. So let me ask you this, Mike McCormick. No one's been talking about, where are the parents? What, are we just going to pretend that never happened? They're dead, likely dismembered as well. What is being done, if anything, and what would you do to try to find these two elderly people that were just trying to help their daughter get through school and take care of her children?
Well, I think the whole thing fell apart when the day laborers went to they first went to the California Highway Patrol and were turned away. They went to LAPD and were told to call 911. The officer that they talked to with LAPD didn't speak Spanish, but he should have gotten somebody that spoke Spanish. And that should have been handled immediately. The fact that they sent him away, I think, and that delay in time is a big problem.
I think it's a huge problem. Dr. Joriel Crossan, I want to follow up. Dr. Jory is a psychologist, former law enforcement, now faculty at St. Leo University, and author of Operation SOS. He's at drjory.com. Dr. Jory, I've heard a lot about May's death, but we're seemingly ignoring that her parents have been murdered too.
That's the first thing that I look at. The behavior pattern, and it'd be very important to locate their bodies, because then you could put together a behavioral sequence, like were they killed, dismembered? You brought that up. There's a lot of other unanswered questions psychologically, especially with the suspect, knowing a little bit more about him. I think you could pretty well profile his behavior as to his actions and what he did in the sequence of the murders and of the disposal of the bodies of the parents.
You know, I'm just wondering, was he attacking the parents and May tried to intervene? I wonder if the children knew what happened. I believe they were home when all three were murdered. And speaking about a window into this guy's personality, dare I look? I want you to take a listen to some of the sound that we have gotten off of his TikTok. Now, this is not anything that has been fabricated against him. He did this to himself. Let's start with, oh gosh, where should I start? This is from Tragic Streets.
So epic. It's like an epic vampire move. Like, pull up in an Escalade outside Paul Wesley's crib. Kids are like, Dad, where's Mom going? What's Mom doing? She's like, oh, she's just going to go chill with Brad Pitt. She's going to go chill with Brad Pitt for a while, maybe go to a concert.
Why does this guy have all this time, Gigi McKelvey, to create, oh, dear gravy. What? Yeah. He adjusts his hair more than any diva I have ever seen on TV or movies. I mean, he's pouting like he's Kim Kardashian in one of her poses that she's going to make $250,000 off of from an ad. What? Who is this guy? I would absolutely call 911 if my husband did that. No question about it. No question. And the pumping iron, he's a gym rat. Why is he doing all this while his wife is out working double time to support his sorry rear end?
I think he's a classic example of failure to launch. It's like he's stuck being this teenager that has a TikTok account that wants to tell the world all the ridiculous stuff that happens in their day. What you don't hear is any talk of his three kids. I mean, you would never look at this guy from his TikTok videos or anything, anybody who's known them, and say he's a very doting dad. He's very hands-on. I mean, you would never even know this guy had a wife or kids. It just seems like he's living out this little fantasy world of being a TikTok star and a wannabe producer where his clips literally only landed on Facebook and seen by a couple of thousand people. He's just trying to reach. And it's really pathetic. I mean, it's just, I look at this and it's very cringy. It's like, this is a 30-something-year-old man who's married with three children. And yet he looks like he's 14 on TikTok with nothing else to do.
Guys, I think he even oils up his body for some of these shots, you know, like professional bodybuilders. Okay, I'm going way down the garden path, out in the weeds. Let's get it back on the road. Could you please play 34? This is Sam Haskell yet again oversharing on TikTok.
Tech conference, real quick, you guys, by mistake. And the number one thing they talked about was consistency, like be consistent. Now I'm consistently never going to stop drinking.
So I wonder if the state, if the defense is going to try and use voluntary intoxication as a defense. That's not going to work, is it, Mangino?
No. Voluntary intoxication is extremely difficult defense. Now, you know, involuntary intoxication or you know, drug use could be a defense. The only thing that voluntary right. intoxication could do would be maybe mitigate the punishment, but it's not going to negate his responsibility.
I want to go back to Joe Scott Morgan joining us. Joe Scott, in the last hours, we have learned that really the main evidence we have is May's dismembered torso. We don't have her arms or legs, her neck or head. She was completely unidentifiable. And if it had not been for the day laborers calling in the day before, then we really wouldn't even know who she was. When the homeless person found her, that's the only way it was tied back to being May, is because of their calls to various law enforcement. Again, we just saw a full screen that talked about arms and legs. That's a little misleading because they're absent. We don't have them to deduce anything. You were saying something earlier, which I found really provocative and most likely true, as to why you believe a power tool, such as a power saw, a handheld power saw, was used to dismember her. Why do you say that based on the physical evidence?
Well, you know, that's what the ME has opined or put forth. They actually state that in the press release that we have relative to the autopsy report. And here's another thing, and I think people want to go down this rabbit hole. You know, they've talked a lot about Haskell's fascination with weapons, in particular samurai swords. This guy, I can assure you, is not a samurai master. All right. So the idea, and I know people are entertaining this, that he could have dismembered her with one fell swoop of some ancient blade that he's in possession of, is a load of crap. That's not happening. He took his time. And in order to take your time to do this with a power tool, you have to have a closed space in order to do that. Gigi really brought this point home just a moment ago when she stated that it was a mess, a horrible mess inside of that house. I suspect that you're going to have blood mixtures that are in there that might go to the parents and obviously are going to go to this poor woman who he has brutalized. And LA has got a hell of a problem in this case, and this is why. This is one of the most densely populated areas in our nation, Nancy. I think because we look, you know, you always talk about if you want to know a horse, check their record. We do know that he made an attempt to dispose of her body in a dumpster. Dollars to donuts, Nancy, I guarantee you, those bodies were placed in a dumpster, and now you're talking about landfill. And for a CSI, for a crime scene investigator, forensic scientist, you're talking about the nightmare of all nightmare scenarios, because it's so vast in LA County where you can dump this stuff off. And they're going to have to get the timing down relative to when trash pickup happened. We can all identify with that because that's something we have in common as just living in our own little towns. And they have this down. It's the idea, can the investigators go back and try to pace this out and get an idea where they would have gone to, where those dumpsters would have gone to? You're talking about Encino, where the first one, where they talked about finding that in the dumpster, but they were domiciled in Tarzana, I believe. So that, again, adds another element to this of complication.
Also, back out to Gigi, you know, he has shown up in court again, shirtless. And he is refusing to wear his anti-self-harm vest. You know, a lot of people say, oh, he's crazy. I actually think based on all of his prior videos he posts, he's actually showing off his chest in court. He's like flexing his muscles in court. I think he did that on purpose.
Yeah, he said he had a pre-existing medical condition that prevented him from wearing the vest. But come on, his TikTok videos are so self-serving. It's hard to think that he just didn't want everybody to see his chest and his tattoos. And it's just, it goes along the line with everything we've seen about him, which is his favorite word is me. Me, me, me. All about him. Not about his wife. Not about his kids. So I'm not surprised. Probably the next hearing, we'll see the same. I wouldn't doubt it for 1 second.
I mean, you know what? You know what Mark Klass said? And guys, he is a champion of victims' rights. His daughter, Polly, was kidnapped from her own place where she lived with her mother. She was sex abused and murdered. When cops showed up at Mark Klass's door, he said, come in, bring the dogs, take my fingerprints, take my blood, take anything, look at my car, look at my office, do whatever you need to do, but find Polly. Find who took Polly. Are we hearing that from Haskell? No, we're not hearing, I didn't do this, do whatever you want with me, but find who killed my wife. Nothing, nothing at all, as Gigi just said, nothing about anyone but himself. And you know, that video of him whining about the Nordstrom restaurant chef overdoing his filet mignon, that's ingrained in my memory. You know how many times I play that in front of that jury? About a million. We wait as justice unfolds. Goodbye, friend.
You're listening to an iHeart podcast.